At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi, everybody. Just as I was jumping on here to do a little bit of a end of the week wrap up, we're not quite at the end of the week, but it's a Thursday in summer. So I felt it was appropriate to jump on and try to make sense of some of the news headlines that we've received this week. Just as I was about to do that, we got news of the death of Hulk Hogan. And I found myself sort of instantly transported back to my childhood when my brother and I used to like to watch World Wrestling. And it was so much fun to watch Hulk Hogan and his spirit and his energy. And obviously, his career had many lives, you know, past that point, but always kind of bringing him back to the ring, if you will. And I found myself really saddened by that news. I wonder how many of you also watched Hulk Hogan or were a fan of his at one point in your life. He has such a unique image. You're seeing one on your screen right now, and sort of energy that he brought to this arena. And I also learned something as I was going through the news related to his passing. You know, there had been times that he talked about past health issues in his life. And as I was talking to one of my colleagues here at Smarter News, I said, oh, you know, they said cardiac arrest, you know, heart attack. I was sort of conflating these terms, and they are actually different conditions. So if you have a heart attack, it's not the same as cardiac arrest. And what authorities are saying now is that he died of cardiac arrest. So just to clarify that, again, just a moment to sort of learn something or relearn something perhaps we've heard in the past. A heart attack is a blockage, something that's blocking your heart from moving blood through it. So it's a block. A cardiac arrest is more of like an electrical issue. So a cardiac arrest is your heart no longer is beating, but that blockage that is very distinct to the heart attack isn't part of this particular situation. So cardiac arrest, again, electrical issue. There's not a beat that's happening. Your heart has stopped beating. Heart attack, you may have a blockage that is stopping your heart from beating. And so perhaps we learn a little bit more about, you know, what caused this or what were some of his past health issues. Again, he spoke about it quite frequently, but when you see Hulk Hogan, you hear Hulk Hogan, you watch Hulk Hogan on video, you may think to yourself, as I did, man, there's really nobody like that. It's very unique, you know, very unique. So sad news for his family and sad news for fans all over the world. It's funny, though, to also kind of hear this news, because I was thinking about the news that I'm about to tackle today. And before I learned the news about Hulk Hogan, I was thinking about how much the past has come to play in our current news cycle and how we really have to be aware of it. Because if you step back from the news, what you realize here is that so many of our big news stories right now are driven by past big news stories. And there's really a question in the ones that I'm going to focus on today about how much new news we actually have, whether we're looking at old stories with new eyes or perhaps new interpretations, or is there actually something brand new about these stories that is the reason why the momentum continues for both of them? So I'm, of course, talking about whether or not Russia interfered in the election process in 2016, and also the Jeffrey Epstein case, and what else there is to learn about this particular case and how the government is now handling it. Just for a little bit of context, I'm going to bring you back to 2016. The top song on the Billboard charts in 2016 was Justin Bieber, Love Yourself. And 2016 was the year that we really got our hands on this story initially, this question about Russian interference in the election. Obviously, the story has continued many different iterations past that point. And in 2019 is important because 2019 was the year of Jeffrey Epstein's arrest by the federal government. He's going to be charged federally. He was in prison when the government says that he committed suicide. In 2019, the top song that year was Old Town Road by Lil Nas, featuring Billy Ray Cyrus. So that was 6 years ago. Think about that. That was 9 and 6 years ago, these stories first came in front of us. And even for the Epstein story, there were mentions of it in the year prior. But really, this is where these stories sort of coalesced. And now we're continuing to see the offshoots of these stories. But we have to approach these stories with that question of what's new and what's different this time compared to what's happened in the past. And one of the reasons why I'm asking that is because we're always looking critically at the way politicians are handling stories like these. And one of the things that we've seen this week, and we're going to talk about this, is guess what? A lot of political behavior by politicians. I know it comes at no big surprise. But this is why I wanted to take a look at these stories. I'm actually not going to go too far in depth about this investigation related to Russia and Russia interference. So we're clear about this latest iteration involving this story. The director of national intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, who oversees these 18 different intel agencies, says that upon looking at the way that the Obama administration handled information regarding the 2016 election, they purposely misconstrued, this is their allegation, the Trump administration's allegation, that the Obama administration purposely manipulated intelligence to serve a narrative that would undermine President Trump. And in doing this, committed treasonous conspiracy was one of the terms that was used. Now, sitting before us, there are those that say, wait a minute, the interpretation by the Director of National Intelligence and this administration is different than past interpretations, but the information is the same, meaning that we're not seeing new information. We have a different look at old information coming to different conclusions. And what the Director of National Intelligence has done is refer these reports to the Department of Justice for further exploration. And what does that mean? We don't know. And I want to talk a little bit about investigations and the timeline for those, because that's really critical here. So this is where we're sitting right now. You have President Obama issuing a rare statement, a rare rebuke, because former presidents don't often speak about current event issues. It's sort of a tradition in America. They don't really slide into the news cycle. They take a more detached approach. But in this case, President Obama did issue a statement definitely refuting this sort of characterization. And now we really have two sides in front of us, those that say there's no here, here, and another side that says there's a there, there. And where this goes from here, we don't know. It's our understanding that the Department of Justice will take a look at these reports by the Director of National Intelligence, but looking at reports or even opening an investigation, it's a very long time horizon to an actual criminal prosecution. And I think that's really important for us to keep in mind here, both about this particular story related to the Director of National Intelligence and what we now are learning or not learning, depending on how you look at it, based on this new report under the Trump administration, as well as this latest sort of rehashing, if you will, of Jeffrey Epstein and the federal case against him. Because here's big, again, putting these two stories just on simmer for a second in front of us, one of the really important things to remember is that all of us could be under investigation really at any time. I could be under criminal investigation right now and have no idea. Investigations can be ongoing for years with no one knowing anything about it except those that are doing the investigation. And to get that investigation to actually an indictment, to something that's being prosecuted in a court of law, can be, again, a very long road and can often, not always, but often involve a grand jury where prosecutors come in front of a grand jury, a jury of our peers, and say, this is the case. This is the case we want to bring. And the grand jury will say whether or not the prosecutor can really bring that case. And it's a real good test ground for prosecutors to see, do they have a case here, especially in the American justice system that is so unique around the world, which is that we're all innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, and that we're tried, prosecuted in front of a jury of our peers who is deciding our fate in criminal affairs. So it's important to keep that in mind here, that there's a lot of threats about investigations and prosecution, but to get to an investigation is one thing, to get to prosecution is another. And that timeline can be, again, a long road. So I want to keep that in mind. One of the things that we're also looking at here is two stories, although very different, where the stakes can be described in a similar way. And before I get into the specifics of some of these cases, I think it's important to recognize that whether we're talking about Russian interference in our election or whether we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein in a case that involved, as the Justice Department says, more than 1,000 victims, what's really at stake here is justice. You know, whether or not there are victims where justice must be done. And in the Jeffrey Epstein case, we know that there are victims. Even though he was never criminally prosecuted in federal court, he was convicted of predatory behavior and had a sex offender designation because of that. There are victims in that case. The Justice Department has confirmed that. And when it comes to this question about Russian interference and what does our election process look like, you know, there's an argument there that can be made that the American people could be a victim here of whether or not it's an election process that's not completely above board, that we know everything that's going on, that there's a crisis of confidence. That could be an argument about whether or not justice is done here. But in both of these stories, there's also a question about elitism and whether or not there's different rules for those of a different class and those that are power brokers. Suddenly they have access or ways that they're moving around in society that the rest of us are not. And those principles are really important. And I'm not dismissing those principles, but why I wanted to talk to you about these stories is they're getting so much attention in the press, and the immediate effect on you and your family is not as clear as some other stories that we could be covering. They're getting disproportionate amount of coverage. And so that's why I wanted to give this sort of end of the week roundup and talk about these stories and where they are right now, because they're stories where there's a lot of conversation and debate about them. But whether or not there's real news value to you in this moment in the immediate is another question that could be more difficult to tackle. Yes, in principle, these stories can affect all of us. And you know, what does it mean to be an American and whether or not justice is done and whether or not justice is served? But the immediate effect is harder to uncover. And so as we're watching those that we're putting into elected office that are there to serve us, I think it's important to keep that in mind. So I wanted to make sense of what is going on when it comes to news value regarding the Epstein files, because this is something that the president of the United States is talking about. The press continues to talk about it. I am curious how much the American public is interested in it and how much interest, if you're just walking down the street, you know, what's your number one concern for the president of the United States or for Congress right now? I wonder how many people would answer Epstein, maybe more, maybe less. I don't know. What do you think about that? I think it's an interesting question. We're in sort of the dog days of summer, if you will. So there's a move to try to, I don't want to say fill time, but this is giving, there's a lot of oxygen that this story is getting that I wonder in a quote unquote more normal news cycle, if whether or not it would. But let's talk a little bit about what did happen or not happen in Congress this week because of the timing and what we're trying to tackle here. So let's just back up. There's been a variety of different media reports. The Wall Street Journal had one, actually has followed up with another one today, that is talking about the relationship between President Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. And this seems to be the inference, although the White House denies it and the president has denied it, any sort of close relationship with Jeffrey Epstein in at least the last, you know, one or two decades, certainly before he died in prison. There seems to be a question here about this relationship and what is the summary, if you will, of reporting surrounding this is that Republicans are trying to protect the president. The president is trying to get the story to go away because he does not want any sort of inference that he is connected at all with Jeffrey Epstein. Obviously, very bad connotation or connection to be related in any way to this individual. And that the White House is absorbing a lot of critique that in the campaign, they talked a lot about releasing more information about it, Jeffrey Epstein, only to get in office and not do it. And that was the big news over the last several weeks is that there was supposedly this client list, but the Department of Justice and FBI came out recently and said, nope, there's no client list and we're not going to release any more information. So the White House has fielded a lot of critique, a lot of criticism. So has the president. And Republican lawmakers are also feeling this pressure from their constituents. And so one of the questions going into this week, which is the final week before a August recess for Congress, is how would lawmakers want to handle this? Are they going to want to address this in some way in a more official capacity, more than they've done in the past several weeks? Because they're concerned about going back to their home districts and catching the heat from voters saying, wait a minute, you guys promised to be different. This is why Republicans have the majority in Congress, why they have the White House, why said voter voted for President Trump. Why aren't you releasing more information? You guys are just as bad as all the other guys. There's no difference here, Republicans and Democrats. This is the elite class. This is the deep state. And now you're in it. This is some of the critique coming from Republican voters, and Republican lawmakers are having to absorb this. So one of the things that we saw Republicans do in Congress is Speaker Johnson said that they were going to recess slightly early. He has a different reason for saying that he was doing this. So basically, it was okay to go and take a little time slightly earlier than what was intended. The New York Times said very pointedly that he did it to avoid any additional votes related to Jeffrey Epstein, that it was a strategic maneuver not to have that happen, not to have a public forum, a more public place for Congress to talk about this issue. Speaker Johnson rejects this characterization. I want you to hear what he has to say.
Congress is doing its work. No one is adjourning early. We have an August district work period that is very important to the function of Congress that has been recognized for all of memory of this institution, and that is what everyone will be doing. The Times was forced to change the headline because it was completely false. No one in Congress is blocking Epstein documents. No one in Congress is doing that. What we're doing here, Republicans, are preventing Democrats from making a mockery of the Rules Committee process because we refuse to engage in their political charade. That is what is happening and nothing more. The way Democrats have tried to weaponize this issue is absolutely shameless. And I just want to say this. Democrats said nothing and did nothing, absolutely nothing, about bringing transparency for the entire 4 years of the Biden presidency. But now, all of a sudden, they want the American people to believe that they actually care. Their actions belie their words. We will not be lectured on transparency by the same party that orchestrated one of the most shameless, dangerous political cover-ups in the history of the United States. And that was President Biden's obvious mental decline.
So the New York Times wasn't the only paper that was characterizing Speaker Johnson as making certain decisions to try to sort of shield Congress from moving forward with any sort of Epstein-related legislation. Here's the Wall Street Journal, and I'm just going to read to you from it. Quote, GOP leaders on Monday canceled House Rules Committee meetings over concerns Democrats would force votes to release material related to Epstein that could put Republicans in uncomfortable positions. Without passing rules, the House can only approve legislation on the floor with a two-thirds majority, which, by the way, is harder to do because Republicans don't have that sort of majority and neither do the Democrats. So this is the characterization. Speaker Johnson is denying it. I want you to have both sides. Before this week, though, we did have legislation come from a bipartisan place. And this is a familiar team that we're seeing come together. It is with Congressman Thomas Massey of Kentucky and Ro Khanna, Congressman Ro Khanna of California. And what they put forward on July 15th is a new bipartisan legislation, and it's called the Epstein Files Transparency Act, EFTA, Epstein Files Transparency Act. And what it would do is and I'm reading here from the press release, force the House of Representatives to vote on the complete release of the government's files related to Jeffrey Epstein. If EFTA is not considered by the House within 7 legislative days, a discharge petition will be circulated. I'm going to get to that in a second. So this would be something that could be brought to the House floor that then would get everybody on the record about whether or not you want to see more information, Democrats, Republicans. And this is something, again, that's being put forward in a bipartisan effort. The discharge petition is something I really don't even remember talking about at any point in any other news story, to be honest with you. It's not something I talk about very often. It's my understanding that what happens in this process is that, let's say I put forward a legislation, it has to go to committee and it has to sit there for 30 days. And if it's not passed out of committee, if it's not considered by Congress, a discharge petition would basically force Congress to consider the legislation. So it's a way of trying to move it along. I mean, that's what it would do. However, in this particular case, the press has conflated a couple things in some of the reporting this week, suggesting that Speaker Johnson's effort to cut the session this week shorter and have breaks start sooner is related to legislation like this getting to the floor. The reality is that there's a lot of procedural votes that would have to take place before legislation would be considered on the floor. So it's not, yes, Speaker Johnson's cutting the time shorter for that, but not necessarily for a big explosive vote that could be in front of Congress in a couple weeks. And actually, Thomas Massie, who put forward this legislation, said as much, although this soundbite didn't get a lot of play. So I'm going to share this with you. And again, this is how he's feeling about the Epstein issue and Congress. So let's take a listen.
Just looking ahead now, it seems like the House may leave even earlier. How does that affect your attempts to be able to get signatures for your discharge petition?
So the discharge petition isn't ripe for 7 legislative days, and unless we stay through Friday, which wasn't even on the calendar, we can't get it to ripen and collect signatures before recess.
Were you surprised at all to see the Rules Committee kind of come to a standstill last night over this issue? I mean, you used to be on the Rules Committee, and obviously you've been caring a lot about that transparency in the Epstein case. Was that surprising at all?
No, it's not surprising to me. I don't think this issue is going away over August. I think that was the admonition of our speaker in there, was just sort of stick your head in the sand, let the administration maybe dissipate this by dribbling some stuff out. I mean, I'm heavily paraphrasing, but I think that's his strategy, and I don't think it's going to work. I mean, people have wanted these files for years, and then, you know, the president's staff, administration, his own children, his vice president have promised that these files would come out, and now we're being told it's a hoax. It just doesn't wash. And whether it's Republican, Democrat, or independent, across all those categories, it's only like 5 or 6% who don't want the files out.
Okay, so again, Congressman Massie from Kentucky, here's his partner in these bipartisan legislative efforts. They have a really interesting friendship and working relationship here, because Ro Khanna is a Democrat from California, and here's what he had to say on this issue.
Save big money right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide detectors are perfect for your living spaces, offering protection and peace of mind. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on Pristine Exterior Paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at
over this controversy. I wanted to ask you about the recent subpoenas to Ms. Maxwell to the DOJ for the release of the Epstein files.
Yes.
Can you just speak to that at
all? I'm very proud of Summer Lee for her leadership in getting a bipartisan subpoena. That means that the DOJ will have to give the files to the Oversight Committee, and we need to make sure that we enforce that subpoena.
And then what do you see the Republicans that are saying the Democrats are focusing on this now? Why wasn't this a topic when President Biden was in office?
We, during the Biden administration, had 2 releases of documents. The courts ordered the documents released in 2021, and the courts ordered them released in 2024. And I am on record having supported Elijah Cummings at Oversight, calling for more of a hearing about Epstein's death and the impact on victims. So it's not true that there wasn't focus on that. Donald Trump raised the stakes, and it was when he said stop the process of more release, when Pam Bondi said there's nothing to see, that we called for transparency.
I'm going to set that in front of you, and you can decide whether or not you thought Republicans and Democrats, both parties, paid any real attention to this issue in a meaningful way since 2019, since Jeffrey Epstein's death. Now, we had a few different news events happen since that time, including a global pandemic. So there were a lot of other things that lawmakers were focused on, but there's this argument now, and you can see it being used by both Speaker Johnson saying, hey, Democrats are using this politically. And then Congressman Khanna here is saying, well, you know, Republicans are making this an issue because they're denying us access. It's up to you to decide, were either party really focused on this issue as a major priority related to Jeffrey Epstein? Congressman Khanna mentioned a subpoena. And here's actually where I think this is, there's two subpoenas. There's two subpoenas that the House Oversight Committee actually voted on in a bipartisan effort. Again, very rare this week. And they have two different outcomes. One was led by Democrats and one was led by Republicans. And so the Democrat that led this vote in the Oversight Committee, remember, Congress's main job is oversight, checks and balances. So the Oversight Committee is real powerful. They can investigate and look at a lot of different things. And Summer Lee, who's a Democrat from Pennsylvania, put forward a subpoena to get the Department of Justice to release these files to a specific subset of this committee. So it wouldn't be released publicly, in the same way that the legislation that Massey and Khanna are working on. So this would be more limited, but it is a subpoena. And I want you to listen to, she just did an interview on MSNBC, and I want you to take a listen to what she had to say about it. It's a little choppy, by the way. There's a few interruptions on this clip, but it summarizes her thoughts on it. So let's go ahead and take a listen.
But right now, what we asked for were the unredacted, complete files. At the end of the day, if someone has participated in child sex trafficking, I don't care if they're a prince or a president or if they're anybody in between, they should be held accountable. And they were just trying to make this a both sides thing to make up for the fact that they were being hypocrites, that they said that this is what they want. We read off all of the members of the subcommittee who called very publicly for these files to be released. We saw that they ran on this in the last election, from Trump on down to all of his folks. They all ran on this. So they're just trying to distract from the fact that they're being hypocrites, that they know that they're choosing to protect Donald Trump over the very victims that they keep giving lip service to, that they're choosing to protect Donald Trump over transparency for the American people that they're calling for, the very base and all Americans of all different parties. And that's really what that was about.
Okay, so that's her point of view about what's going on in Congress right now, the politics that are involved. Again, that's subpoenas going to the DOJ, Department of Justice. Hey, Congress wants to take a look at these files. Separately, same committee, we have a different congressman, a Republican, Tim Burchett from Tennessee. And he, by the way, you're going to see this video, for those of you who are watching, for those of you who are listening, he always shoots a video kind of from, like, if he's holding papers, like looking up. And he talks a lot directly to his audience through X. And so he comes out of committee, he'll give a summary. And in his case, what he did is he requested that the Oversight Committee vote on a subpoena to get Ghislaine Maxwell, the convicted co-conspirator of Jeffrey Epstein, to speak to the committee. So again, not speak publicly in a public hearing, but for her to speak directly to Congress. That was voted on, and that was also approved in the committee in a bipartisan way. So again, rare to see bipartisan efforts and rare to see these sort of high profile subpoenas happen in this quick succession and see this momentum. So here's Congressman Burkett.
That's it right there. I had it printed out, so I made sure I do it appropriate. Talked to Chairman Comer. He's down with it. We're good. I believe he's going to issue the subpoena. He's a stand-up guy. We just got to get to the bottom of this thing, folks. It's just, it's 4 years, and, you know, we don't need to tolerate this stuff anymore. And I'm getting, you know, I get the blowback about folks up here going to be mad at me, but ultimately, and with all sincerity, excuse me, I'm going to answer my creator on this issue and what we did about the least amongst us. And we got to send a message to these dirtbags that do this. This is not acceptable behavior. And also a message to the victims that we believe you and that you need to come out of the shadows. And we need to bust these people that do this and send them to hell, because I'm over it.
So there you go. He just doesn't parse words. I felt like we needed at least one dirtbag reference as part of our podcast today. So there you go. We got it. Check the box. Here we go and move on. So now we have these subpoenas. And a question is, when are they going to be followed through on, and how are they going to be followed through on? That is a big question. And you have Congress that's going to be in recess. So when everybody gets back in September, going into October, what sort of energy surrounds this story then? is anyone's best guess. That's also true of the story related to the Director of National Intelligence and these new reports that they're putting forward as well to the Department of Justice. How does the momentum continue, especially when Congress is not in session, where not everyone's in D.C. jumping in front of a camera, coming out of a hearing, doing something like that? What happens next? So now at least we know there's some activity that's actionable, but when that action takes place, we don't know. So hopefully that we kind of set the table, and we're going to have to leave that table empty until we start seeing some new news on it. Why are we even talking about this Epstein stuff? Remember, he was convicted. He went to court. State of Florida prosecuted him. He got that deal. We talked about this last week on our podcast. If you didn't listen to that kind of scene setter about Jeffrey Epstein, it's worth it. But remember, he's got this really beneficial plea deal where he was not going to be prosecuted federally. And yes, he, you know, had to register as a sex offender and he was convicted of awful crimes, but he didn't serve a crazy amount of time and more or less got back to his regular life. So what happened? You know, like, why did we start talking about Jeffrey Epstein again? And this is something that very few people realize, but it really has to do with journalism and specifically the Miami Herald, which I'm going to show you right now. This is the article that came out in November of 2018. And the title of this article was "How a Future Trump Cabinet Member Gave a Serial Sex Abuser the Deal of a Lifetime." This was a big piece written by Julie Brown that's continued to do reporting on this particular topic for the next several years after this. And what she uncovered, and really when you look at the piece, in many ways, it was a piece that was very critical of the Trump administration at the time, saying, hey, there's this guy. He's the labor secretary. I'm going to show you a picture of him. He's the labor secretary, Alex Acosta. He was the U.S. attorney for Southern Florida. And I'm quoting here from the paper, when he negotiated an end to the federal investigation of Jeffrey Epstein. So he was serving in the Trump administration. Later, by the way, he resigned. And this all came paralleled Jeffrey Epstein's eventual arrest in 2019, which happened about, let me see the date of this article, which was published again, just looking back on it, just so we have the timeline straight, November of 2018. So this article comes out November of 2018, and Jeffrey Epstein is arrested in July of 2019, June, July, 2019. And dies in prison a few weeks after that. So without the Miami Herald taking another look at this plea deal and wondering, like, what happened here? Why did this happen? I don't know if any of us would be talking about Jeffrey Epstein anymore. There would be investigative, you know, journalists and some documentarians that would take a look at this very shady, awful case that didn't have a lot of activity, sure. But whether or not it would be in front of Congress in this sort of way, I don't know if any of that happens without the Miami Herald. And that opened the door to more investigation and questions about, wait a minute, how did this guy get this deal? And this all sounds really bad. And these victims have been coming out for years saying they want to prosecute him and others. And because of the nature of this deal, their pursuits were limited. So I'm going to link that article to the show notes here, because if you want to go back, some of you have asked, how did this all start? This is a good place to start, is to read this article and see, as this name comes back on the scene, Jeffrey Epstein, in the framework that it's done under the Trump administration. It feels like a million years ago, 2018. But this is how it sort of relaunched. And then these investigations have now been ongoing and all sorts of questions have been asked. So we'll see if any new news does happen. In the meantime, at least you have a little bit of foundation for what is all this activity on Congress? What is everyone talking about? That's Jeffrey Epstein. We'll keep an eye as well as the Director of National Intelligence reports. Now, real quick before I let you go, I do think there is a trade-off here. I feel compelled to organize this news for you because it is so partisan. There's so much talk about it. There's so much debate. You don't really know what's what. And by the way, we're a long ways away about legally knowing what's what, whether or not there's going to be a prosecution in any way for any of these stories, whether or not we're going to see any legal cases, whether there's going to be actual consequences. Like, we have no idea. Any of that could happen. In the more immediate, there's some real stories that could really affect you. I just want to touch on two of them real quick here. Now, these stories may not get front page billing anyways, because they're not as jazzy, if you will, as others. But as far as affecting our families, these are stories that can really do that. So one of them I want to show you is what's going on with some new data that we got on home sales. So this is a headline from the Wall Street Journal. Home prices hit record high in June, dragging down sales. But I want to show you this graph here that gives you an idea of how high prices are relative to the last, you know, 25 years. And you can see that we're at the highest point that we've ever seen for median existing home prices. Existing home prices are homes that are already built. It's kind of like the used car market, but think about it in the way that homes that are already built are the biggest portion of the market because fewer people are building brand new homes and living in them. Even if someone lives in a home for 6 months or a year and flips it, it's still an existing home. So this is, you know, I think it's like 80, 85% of the home market. So we're seeing really, really record high home prices and we're seeing sales drop. The reason why this is important on a national level is because home prices and the housing market drive so much of our economy. It's not just about buying a home, which is a major purchase. It involves, usually involves the bank. It's about all the little things that go along with it. It's about whether or not you're buying a new shower curtain and some new couches and you have to get your oven fixed. So there's services related, service industries obviously related to the housing market. There's consumerism that's just related to moving. And that's those are huge purchases for the economy. So when we see prices go way, way up and we see sales go down, we wonder if that's a sign of future struggle for the economy because we know that data is always backwards looking. So this is typically a busy time of the year also for home sales is after school gets out. People want to move and they want to get settled before school starts again. So because we're seeing this happen in the summer, it's also raising more concerns about what's happening in the housing market and how that can affect the general economy overall. Now, it is true in some areas, and this article points it out, for example, in the state of Texas, where I am broadcasting right now, in the Austin area, we have seen home prices come way, way down because they were for lack of a better term, inflated during the pandemic. Florida as well, you're seeing home prices come down. So it is true that home prices are not at record highs everywhere. If we're looking at national data and how we're interconnected, this is why I think this story is really critical because of what it can mean for the economy and because of the time of year, because it's the summer and we're always looking towards the back half of the year. How's the economy going to look? Because we know Christmas is key for how the economy and companies perform. And so this is, we're raising questions. What's going on here? Now, there's also a question here for mortgage rates. You know, should we see mortgage rates come down? The president's talked about that. People talk about lower mortgage rates. It's going to make, you know, homes more affordable for people. Well, the home prices are still really high. So you got to be careful about that. Just because it's easier to borrow money doesn't mean that you should. And then we get into other questions about a housing bubble, you know, a loan crisis. There's all sorts of questions we could ask related to that. I just think having this on your radar is important. Speaking of putting something on your radar, I want you to take a listen to this. Sam Altman, as you likely know, is the CEO of OpenAI. And if you use ChatGPT, you're using one of its products. Let's go ahead and take a listen.
I am very nervous about this. A thing that terrifies me is apparently there are still some financial institutions that will accept a voice print as authentication for you to like move a lot of money or do something else. You say a challenge phrase and they just do it. That is a crazy thing to still be doing. Like AI has fully defeated that. AI has fully defeated most of the ways that people authenticate currently, other than like passwords, but all of these like fancy, you know, take a selfie and wave or do your voice or whatever. I am very nervous that we have an impending, a significant impending fraud crisis because of this. We have tried, I think other people in our industry have tried to sort of warn people like, hey, just because we're not releasing the technology doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Some bad actor is going to release it. This is not a super difficult thing to do. This is coming very, very soon. And you know, there's obviously some reports now of these sort of like ransom attacks where people have the voice of your kid or your parent and they make this urgent call. That is going to get so compelling. Society has to deal with this problem more generally, but people are gonna have to change the way they interact. They're going to have to change the way they verify, like this person calling me. Right now it's a voice call. Soon it's going to be a video FaceTime. It'll be indistinguishable from reality. And teaching people how to authenticate in a world like that, how to think about, you know, the fraud impacts, this is a huge deal.
I can confirm to you that I am a real person today. But if I can maybe clone myself in some capacity to provide these reports to you, I mean, maybe it's not a bad idea. It could be helpful because there's a kid that's supposed to be power washing outside and putting them on pause to record this podcast. I got to go pick up my kids. You know, if I could have just AI step in here and just kind of wrap things up, maybe it could be helpful. The fact that he says that none of this is that hard to do is super frightening. And as someone who this week I received, are you guys getting these text messages? You know, AT&T wants to run a battery check on your iPhone. You owe a parking ticket in a different state that you don't live in anymore. You know, there's all of these phishing and fraud things coming across our desk on a regular basis. If I got a call from my kid in trouble, that's a whole other level. Thinking it's my kid, it's not my kid. It's very, very frightening. So I want to keep an eye on this story. We're going to go full circle, going back to the principles of the stories that we talked about justice and elitism and power. These are always important principles in a lot of stories that we're tackling, and I'm not dismissing them. But as far as stories that are going to impact your life in a very real way that I don't want to catch, you know, for you to be caught off guard, these are the stories, whether it's the housing market, what's going on with the economy, what's happening with AI, that I don't want to lose sight of when we have to get sucked in a little bit on these other stories. And I'm glad to be able to jump in and explain some of this to you. It's helpful to me to organize what's happening because it is so confusing, even for someone who's worked 20 years in the news and has worked a lot of different congressional cycles with a lot of different behavior. It's the organization of all this information coming at us that I think we can be helpful, and I want to be helpful to you. I just don't want to lose sight of what's really, really important to you and your families in the immediate. So I'm watching out for you. I'm curious what other stories you'd like us to cover, what other questions you would have. Please let us know. You could always email us hello@smarternews.com. And I love hearing from you. I love hearing your audio notes, as long as that's your real voice. You can send us an audio memo. It just has to be a real voice. You don't have to give me your social security number. But I like your real voice asking a question, and we can use those in our podcast. Anyhow, hope you're off to a great day wherever you are, and look forward to being back with you to deliver quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Have a great day, guys. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money.